The story you're about to hear on Love, Lust, Fear is true. Some names, places, and other identifying details may have changed to protect the storyteller. Love, Lust, Fear may contain graphic language and depictions of sensitive situations. Please listen with caution. Next on Love, Lust, Fear.
I had moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. I wasn't in a great place when I started internet dating. He was making me feel a way that felt good. All of the weird things about me that I actually love and always have, but men didn't necessarily, he loved those things. And I had had relationships with people who abused alcohol in the past. And I was like, no, I'm not doing this. And I broke up with him that night. He would just be verbally abusive to me, like say the worst things you could ever say to a person. And the first time she and I had a real conversation, she said to me, you know, he left me when I was 7 months pregnant, right? And he was driving by the house and all this shit. And so he had no support system. And I was afraid he was going to commit suicide. I was afraid he was going to kill us.
Mira was raised on a steady diet of romantic 80s comedies, particularly the John Hughes stuff. These movies shaped her notion of romance and endearing love. And she spent most of her 20s chasing after the elusive dream of an us-against-the-world kind of relationship. Instead, she often found herself disillusioned, entangled in rocky romances. As Mira entered her mid-30s, she desperately needed a change of scenery, abandoning her West Coast roots for some East Coast culture, settling in and possibly settling down. When she connected with the guy online who cherished all her quirky tastes that guys didn't usually care for, she was ready to start a new life with him and excited to raise a child of her own. But she didn't imagine it would be in the form of a 40-something-year-old man.
I never really learned how to date in a healthy way in my 20s. I definitely was part of that more of a binge drinking culture where you went out on Friday night and drank a lot. And so then I'd meet men drinking, and then they turned out to, you know, have alcohol problems or what have you. By the time I was in my early 30s, I had moved from the West Coast to the East Coast. I wasn't in a great place, and I wasn't clicking and making as many friends that I liked, that I wanted to spend time with as I wanted to. I was kind of in a place of floundering and not feeling very settled. And then when I started internet dating, I got all those responses, including him. So the first time I saw his photo, I was like, he certainly wasn't my ideal physical type at all, but he was tall. And I typically like tall men, but his appearance wasn't the most important thing to me. And in my profile, I had said, I loved Bill Murray before it was cool to love Bill Murray. And his first response was, I bet I love Bill Murray more than you do. And so granted, that was the best response I had, but I ignored it. And then a day or two later, he messaged again and it said, plus, I think you're really cute. And then a day or two after that, he said, and I'm going to be really butthurt if you don't respond. I was like, oh my God, okay. And then we started talking. We were first talking, and I took screenshots of those back then because I knew it was not quite right. And he said, OMG, I'm going to need you to be my girlfriend ASAP. Let's get this ball rolling. Make it happen. And I said, ha, 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 wish I weren't so fucking busy and booked till December. And then he said things like, not trying to get too crazy here, but you're pretty close to my ideal woman. I couldn't have made you up. And I said, you are such a sweet talker. And he said, I'm not trying to scare you off. I'm not insane, I swear. I said, you're not. I'm just leery of it. And he said, I mean, you like Bill Murray, you curse, you like weird shit like cross stitch, you like dogs, you like kids. He said, I told my mom I was pre-engaged to my internet girlfriend. My mom thinks I'm cray cray. I said, ha ha ha, she's right, you are cray cray. I know it's fucking crazy. I'm going to marry you. It's my new goal in life. I'm excited about it. He told me that he loved me. So at this point, I had only been communicating with him for a week and had never met him in person. He was making me feel a way that felt good. All of the weird things about me that I actually love and always have, but men didn't necessarily, he loved those things and played those things really well, even though I knew it felt wrong. He wanted to pick me up from the airport. He stayed really, really, really late, and we French kissed and all of that jazz, and he ended up spending the night. And then the next day, I needed to be at work. I was serving Thanksgiving meal to kids, and so he came with me, and I thought that was very sweet to come do something altruistic with me. And honestly, from that moment on, he didn't leave my apartment or I was at his apartment. He also had two kids, two little kids from a previous marriage. And he introduced them to me immediately, which also deep down I knew was a really big red flag because I didn't feel comfortable with it. But I, again, excused it away as maybe this is real. Maybe this is what it seems to be. And I immediately fell in love with those kids and met his ex-wife, who wasn't actually his ex yet. And she was wonderful and had a good job and was put together. And I met his parents within a month. And I early on set a boundary with him saying no hard liquor because he'd get like wasted, couldn't remember falling over drunk. Basically, he was still a mess from leaving his ex-wife, moving away, and then coming back because he missed his kids too much. I picked up all the pieces and put him back together from that. We were completely all in. I was a part-time stepmom to his beautiful kids. And then his ex-wife had messaged me asking if she could go through me to coordinate custody schedules with the kids because he couldn't do it. And I was, of course, yes, absolutely. I'd love to do that. I felt good in that role. And I've always adored children and not having any of my own at 35. And so I just continued to take on his responsibilities. I made sure he was paying child support. And he immediately wanted for us to get a joint checking account. I was clueless. I didn't know what that meant, really. It was just like, yeah, that'll be easier. Let's just do that. Like, when he was good, he was good. Like, he was sweet and funny and all of these things. But again, I continued to take on more and more and more and more and more responsibilities that were his responsibilities. And I was fine with it because I'm a caretaker by nature and very much an empath. And so after we moved in together, I was having fun planning all of these things and taking on all of the responsibility and doing all of the communication with his ex, with the kids, and working with her. And the first time she and I like had a real conversation, she said to me, "You know he left me when I was 7 months pregnant, right?" That was her way of saying, "Honey, run." And I didn't. I excused his behavior by saying, "If you're unhappy, when is the right time to leave a wife?" That's what I told myself. And so that's the way I would tell it to other people. But I omitted that he left her for another woman. He and I went to see Brandi Carlile, who is one of my all-time favorite musicians from way back. And I remember him buying like mini bottles of Fireball. And he was absolutely embarrassingly hammered. He would do that anytime we were in public. So I learned early on not to bring him in public. And I had had relationships with people who abused alcohol in the past. And I was like, no, I'm not doing this. And I broke up with him that night. He ended up grabbing my phone from me and throwing it against the wall and breaking it. That whole night, I don't think we even slept. And we're crying and it was dramatic. And I was saying, it's over, it's over, it's over. And he pushed and he pushed and he pushed and he pushed for it not to be over. But I was sticking to my guns. And his mom even helped convince me not to break up with him. And then finally, I was like, okay, we'll give it another shot. And so my mom and I went to Savannah because we had never been. And we were having a great time. And as we're walking around the whole town and doing things, I was texting with a friend of mine, like, maybe I'll move to Savannah. Like, this is awesome. And I remember I was looking up jobs there. And there was still the taste in my mouth from the incident 2 weeks earlier. And so he panic, drove to Savannah. And he kept asking, what are you guys doing? He sent me a pin on Google Maps and he said, meet me or come to this place. And I go there and then he like gets down on one knee and proposes to me on the Riverwalk in Savannah. It was like a panic proposal because he had read text messages that I wanted to move to Savannah. But I remember then I like was immediately announcing it on Facebook and calling everybody and announcing it to everybody. And I know his family was like super, super, super happy about it because I fixed him. I picked him up when he was a fucking broken mess and put the pieces back together. So yeah, they were happy about it. He was my problem, not theirs. And all of my people were excited and happy for me. But there was hesitancy in their responses and voices. One time we were fighting and I probably said I wanted to break up and not get married. He broke down doors to get to me and he never laid a hand on me, but he wouldn't leave me alone. And so I didn't ever tell anybody about those. We ended up getting married and we probably had 90 people at my wedding. And of those people, there were 5 people there that were his people. And they were his immediate family members. It was very eye-opening in a lot of ways because, in a sense, it was like adopting him as a teenager is really what it felt like because I had taken on all these responsibilities. And then we got home and we're married. And I was very much like, okay, I've decided to get pregnant. And I was 37 then and got pregnant. And so then my focus was the pregnancy. And, you know, everything just moved so damn fast. I mean, we're talking, we'd only been together for 2 years. And then I was having a baby. And so when I brought her home, she was only 5 pounds, like 13 ounces. She was just teensy and like the most perfect little thing ever. And I would just weep with love for her. I had to go back to work when she was 9 weeks old. And I think he provided good care to her. But nothing else was done. There was no coordinating. There was no going to the grocery store or identifying that we needed toilet paper and doing something about that. I paid all 100% of the bills. I managed 100% of the money, and I am not good at managing money. I would beg for help, beg for it, and he wouldn't do it. And he'd say he'd do it. So my perspective was always, I could never tear the family apart. And he loves me with all of my faults. Like, nobody is going to love me the way he loves me. And there was still, like, a lot of drinking. Always drinking. I mean, daily drinking. even though, you know, early on I had said no hard alcohol, but then I'd find mini bottles of Fireball under the bathroom sink. And that is another thing that made me not attracted to him, is he didn't take care of himself at all. Wouldn't quit smoking and wouldn't quit drinking and refused to put anything healthy in his body. I've always been very anti-guns and firearms, and I allowed guns in the house, and I did not feel comfortable with that. When we would every few months get into a big fight, when I would hit the wall, and you know, through these years, my anxiety is continuing to rise and get worse. And he struggled with depression. He would threaten to kill himself, but only in fights where it really felt like a tool of manipulation. If you don't do this, I'm going to kill myself. Or if you don't stay with me, I'm going to kill myself. When I'd tell him I wanted a divorce, I meant it. But when I'd become less angry, it would always be, I can't do that. I can't do that to the kids. I can't do that. We have too much of a good thing going here, which we did, like I said. And then it was that cycle. I really started thinking more seriously about divorce. And then also I began my new job and became close with my boss. I could be totally real and authentic with her. And we talked about more and more personal things. She'd tell me, like, you need to leave this dude. And I would say, I can't, I cannot do that to the kids. And she would say, I promise you that your daughter is only 5. It's better to do it now than later on. I started having physical symptoms and more difficult to manage anxiety, fatigue, and insomnia. And I was so stressed out. I was so overwhelmed. I was in that like crumbled, shattered state. And I was like rapidly losing weight too, because I couldn't eat anything. I lost like 30 pounds during this time. And then I texted him that. And then he would just be verbally abusive to me, like say the worst things you could ever say to a person, telling me that I was ruining my daughter. And I mean, just horrible things. And I was in such a fucking fragile state. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm done. And so while he was at work and I was home saying I want a divorce, he was texting about like how it was going to ruin my life and I'd have to sell the house and saying the worst things you could ever imagine. Like, he's called me cunt a million times and he gets red in the face and like looks me dead through my soul calling me a cunt. This is my house and he could never have bought it on his own. He just wore me down. Like, that's what he did our entire marriage, is he wore me the fuck down and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed until I had nothing left and acquiesced to whatever it was he wanted. He sent me a screenshot of our bank accounts and he'd emptied them. And he said, I left you $17 so you can get yourself a little snack. And he was scaring me. And at this point, I knew he wasn't going to let me go. I think like 8 p.m., maybe 8:30, because I knew he'd be getting home between like 9 and 10. And so I like quickly packed a bag for my daughter and myself. I also took the key to the gun cabinet so that he couldn't get to guns. He'd broken into my Facebook Messenger and had messaged like an ex-boyfriend of mine from like 15 years ago who would send me like nostalgic Facebook messages sometimes, but they weren't like, they were innocuous. And he messaged him like, you're a pathetic, all this, calling him from my Facebook account. And then said, actually, you can have this broke ass bitch. Please take her off my hands. And I was afraid he was gonna commit suicide. I was afraid he was going to kill us. And he was driving by the house and all this shit. And so he had no support system. He's never had any friends. I'd messaged his parents saying he is not okay. Somebody needs to come be here with him. He needs someone here. He is not safe. His dad didn't really engage with me, but his mom poo-pooed me. So he later admitted that he burned everything I owned in the backyard. He continued to send verbally abusive text messages, tried to threaten me with anything that he could that would ruin my life. We had our divorce mediation in February, and he signed it and agreed to it all, which was me keeping the house and my 401ks and me taking on all of the debt and us walking away, basically saying, what's in your name is yours, what's in my name is mine. I have very, very strict boundaries, and he knows what they are. I only want to communicate about our daughter. That's it. I don't want to communicate about anything else. It's still only been 6 months, but I have zero interest. I cannot imagine having any interest in dating or relationships. But I can't say how I will feel in the future.
When I spoke with Mira, I asked her about why she avoided sharing her struggles with her friends.
I was embarrassed of him. I didn't know what he was going to do or be like, if he was going to get falling down drunk or just stand in a corner smoking cigarettes around other people. My friends and I tell each other the truth. If we don't think someone is good for the other, we will tell each other. We will say, I love you and support you regardless, but here's what I'm seeing. I didn't share the things that I knew would cause my loved ones to try to talk me out of the entire relationship.
Then I wanted to know how she's recovering from the impact that his behavior had on her social life.
I survive off of deep, authentic relationships with others in all different forms. I've had more people in and out of my house since then, so I've really realized what a block he put up socially. Yeah, and I love people, and I've been more social in the last 6 months than I have in 10 years.
And then I asked her, did you think you'd have the strength to leave him? And what are you most proud of about yourself now?
I did not think I could do what I've done. Oh, this is what's going to make me cry. I'm proud of doing the things I needed to do during that time. I'm proud of going and opening my current checking account and talking to the lawyer and checking things off a list. And I gave myself 1 week to be a shit show. And then I said, you have 1 week, and then you have to pull it together for your daughter. And I did. And I worked 2 jobs and I breathed. And I'm proud of myself for allowing others to help. It's hard to receive. I also told myself, I'm going to say yes when people offer. I'm going to say yes. I realized I have much, much deeper friendships here than I realized. And the people that rallied, especially during that first week, who were checking on me every 2 hours, were not necessarily the people I expected. So that was really interesting, eye-opening, and I will have this intense love and appreciation for those people forever.
And finally, what would she tell herself back then that she knows now? And what advice would she have for anyone in a toxic marriage?
I would, first of all, tell her that she's a lot stronger than she knows and that she has to be comfortable with uncertainty. I had to trust my path. And I don't do well with that. I like knowing what comes next. So you have to trust that you will be okay. And you have to lean on others and come into a space of receiving and acceptance and put that out into the universe. And if you don't feel like you have anybody there, you know, the great thing about social media and the website is there, and the internet, there's a group for everything. Go into those groups because women who have been through this will be there for you. Because I had so many questions just about the logistics of divorce and everything. I've said, I'm here. Reach out to me if you need something.
Unfortunately, Mira found a partner who was more than willing to take full advantage of her caregiving and empathy. As he repeatedly broke down each one of her boundaries, she excused his behavior for a time because she didn't want to believe anyone would embrace her traits and love her the way he did, no matter the cost to her happiness and health. At first, when she thought she stepped into a solid and functional co-parenting situation between him and his ex-wife, she quickly realized that it was due to the work of his ex-wife making the situation work, a pattern that would continue with Mira and their daughter. Mira felt obligated to care for his adult responsibilities and carried the burden of keeping their family together, while he did almost everything to tear them apart. He robbed her of her social life because she felt embarrassed about his public drinking behavior, and she didn't feel comfortable sharing her pain with friends, but fortunately found support through her boss at work. Mira's story really highlights the question, when is the right time to leave a bad relationship? If someone in your life begins to completely withdraw from frequent social activity after they start dating or get involved in a relationship, pay particular attention. They may be involved with a toxic partner. Until next time, I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Love, Lust, Fear. Every guest featured on Love, Lust, Fear selects a charity or organization to share. Please check the show notes on this episode for more details. If you or someone you know is being abused by a partner, there is help available. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence. Just call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text START to 88788. If you'd like to be a guest on Love, Lust, Fear and share your personal dating or relationship story, you can email us at lovelustfearpod@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram at lovelustfearpod. Disclaimer, the information shared on this podcast should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.